Well, good morning, y'all. We made it. I did not do this last service, so y'all are getting totally impromptu here. You see, my wife always says that I'm not an emotional person, and the truth of the matter is I'm not a sentimental person because I know I'll get emotional in the aftermath of being sentimental. And yet I think for both of us, as we stand on the other side of weeks and months and really years of vision and preparation for a day like today, one of the things that we want to make known from our hearts is it's weeks like this in which we stand firm in this reality that there is no place that we'd rather be. And there's no group of people that we'd rather be linking arms with. And there's no God we'd rather be standing firm on. And we have no idea. We've pushed our chips to the middle, and within months we could all be without jobs and this thing could go up in smoke. And yet what we believe with all of our heart is that the juice was worth the squeeze. Is that we're positioning ourselves to see God do what only he can do. And so I just wanted us collectively, this isn't just the worship leader, this is my wife, for us to tell you guys thank you. And that we absolutely cannot wait. We stand here with expectation and hope of where God's going to take each and every one of us in our stories from here forward. If we haven't met before, my name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And if today is your very first Sunday here, here's one thing that we want you guys to know. You heard a little bit about our heartbeat, but the truth of the matter is that who we are is this. Everything we've done around here and everything that you see and all of the chips that we've pushed into the middle, we've done it for you. Because around here, what we understand is this. Is that the local church isn't about us, it's about you. It isn't about these four walls. It's about us doing everything we can to understand this reality, that it is so ridiculously difficult to walk into a church for the very first time, to re-engage with God or the church after you've given up on it and you've been hurt by it. And we wanted this place to be different. We wanted this place to be all about you and you finding a place in which you could see Jesus for who he really is. And that doesn't mean that we're perfect. It actually means the exact opposite. It means that when you walk through those doors of CORE Community Church, what you're going to find is a place full of broken, imperfect people who are just trying to figure this thing called life out, just like you. And yet we count ourselves ridiculously privileged week in and week out to get to spend an hour of our time with you. Because we know it's not easy. And yet we appreciate and value that step of courage that you've taken. This morning we kick off this brand new series that we are calling Not In It to Win It. And when we start to throw out that P word of politics, it scares us all just a little bit. And what you need to know from the very beginning as we set expectations of this two-week series that leads us towards Easter is this. Is that this particular series may not be a comfortable series or an easy series, but this particular series was strategically planned for this moment in time in our story as CORE Community Church, and here's why. Because we believe that the premise around this series realigns us with what our heartbeat is supposed to be as Christ followers and as the church. And we believe that if you're sitting there and you walked into CORE for the first time and you're still skeptical about this whole church thing or this whole God thing, that you are here at the perfect time as well. Because throughout this series, what you're going to get to hear is this. You're going to get to hear what we as the local church are striving for and attempting to align ourselves with and what we, maybe you've never heard this before, don't always get right. Well, we fall off the horse time and time again as we are striving to model who Jesus was in a crazy and broken and messed up world. And we are willing to admit that every day we're striving to be like Jesus, and yet we don't always get it right. And yet we want you to see not us, but who Jesus really is. But here's the second necessary expectation. That as we talk about some of the difficult things over the course of the next 2 weeks throughout this series, what I want you to know is this, is that this series comes from a place of me witnessing all of y'all doing this in incredible ways. That so many days of your life and your story, you are accomplishing this and fulfilling this and living this out and doing this in incredible ways for the sake of our city and for the sake of our world. And so you're saying, Ben, well, if we're doing such a great job, why are we talking about it? Well, here's what I know. That when it comes to my life, if we don't consistently talk about who we are called to be, in a ridiculously hectic, chaotic, broken, messed up world, it can become far too easy for us to slip back into the path that takes us in the wrong direction. And so throughout this series, we want to talk about something that we're all doing so incredibly well, but as we stand on the forefront of this new part of our journey, to make it known that we will not lose sight of this, that we will continue to realign ourselves with who Jesus is calling us to be. And let's just be ridiculously honest about this one thing for a sec. You see, what all of us know when it comes to navigating all lives and decisions and the circumstances and the divide and disagreements that seem to be the norm in the culture and the world around us, what we all know is this fact. Life is hard. Am I right? Is that the world in which we live, the culture in which we find ourselves immersed in, has us asking questions of how we are supposed to appropriately navigate that division and divide and disagreement that we constantly find ourselves facing, whether we call ourselves followers of Jesus or not, that navigating all of this tension and all of this division in our world is no easy task. You see, things are constantly changing around us. And as things change, ultimately what happens? What happens is that in the midst of change is the very place in which we see division and divide and disagreement rise to the surface within our relationships. It rises to the surface in our workplaces, in our schools, in our everyday conversations. And for honesty's sake, the fact of the matter is that none of us are foreign to this reality of conflict, confrontation, disagreement within our lives. Because if we were willing to get ridiculously honest, what we'd be forced to admit is this, is that you have not been in relationship with one person in your life in which you have seen eye to eye on every single thing. In fact, so many of y'all were willing to say I do to somebody that you don't agree with everything with. And you were willing to lay down in that bed, regardless of if you agree on everything, and trust that they weren't going to strangle you at night because of those disagreements. You see, as we navigate the relationships of our life, disagreement and division and differing opinions is a constant with every relationship of our lives. And if that's the case, then what we should constantly be asking is this. What does it look like to navigate that confrontation and that divide in a healthy way, so that we can show Jesus to our world? Because that ultimately is what we are called to for those of us in this room who consider ourselves to be Christ followers. That you may be the only glimpse of Jesus that our city, that our world, that that person who sits in the cubicle next to you ever sees. And let me just say this. If you've been around CORE for any amount of time, you've probably heard me say this countless times. But this particular series revolves around calling those of us who consider ourselves to be Christ followers to something different. And what that means for you if you aren't a Christ follower is this, is that nothing we're going to talk about during this series, you're on the hook for. And hopefully that relaxes you. Because this series is one in which you get to come in and simply see and hear what we are trying to align ourselves with individually as Christ followers and collectively as CORE Community Church, what we are striving for and how we are striving to be different than the culture and the norm around us to bring about something different in our city and our world. And you can simply sit back, relax, and have an inside look into all the ways we fail at that, and yet all the ways that we're willing to admit we fail, and yet we're going to continue to shoot to get better at it and to continue to be like who Jesus really was in our world. And you see, all of this uncertainty that comes with the division, whether it be political or whether it be within any number of topics in our world, all of this division creates uncertainty around what is the right way to act and react in the midst of those situations. And nothing has magnified that reality of life being hard and figuring out how to navigate differing opinions than the last 3 years, am I right? that as we've come through things over the course of the last 3 years, like the 2020 election and everything that happens between the elections every 4 years politically, and we come through a global pandemic and differing opinions when it comes to vaccinations, and all of these different things in our lives, differing opinions on a multitude of hot topics and financial uncertainty, not to mention all the differing opinions that just happen beneath the roof of our own home and trying to be a husband or a wife or a father or a mother or a grandparent to the people in which we don't always see eye to eye with. The reality is for every single one of us, this season has been a challenge for us. And if you're anything like me, as you travel through uncertainty of the last 3 years, there are tons of questions that you get bombarded with. Some of them externally, but for me, at least, many of them internally. That if the squirrels running around in my head that I have to process through. Man, what is the right way to act and react? To face questions like, why don't you step in more and choose a side of the political divide? Why don't you make your church's stance more known to the world around you and jump right deep into the middle of all of that conflict and tension and stand strong on this is what we believe and all of these different things and choose a side? And my deepest hope is that this particular series is an opportunity for us to redefine the why, to renew our vision around the why to those choices in our lives individually and collectively, and to recenter us on the one model. The one model that we as Christ followers have been called to follow. You see, there is a question that in light of the seasons of uncertainty that I go through, in light of the seasons of uncertainty that you have undoubtedly gone through in your life, there is a question that I have found that if I just would consistently stop and ask this question in the middle of turmoil, in the middle of stress, in the middle of disagreement, would eliminate or at least alleviate some of the regrets that happen on the other end of the stressful situations and the division and divide and the disagreements of my life. And the question that oftentimes I don't step back and ask, but I've recognized I should, and it would make my reaction a whole lot healthier than what it typically is this. Is that when this particular season is nothing but a story you tell, what story do you want to tell? When this season of raising toddlers is nothing but a story you tell, what story do you want to tell? When this challenging season of raising teenagers and the constant conflict and disagreement that comes with those relationships is nothing but a story you tell, what story do you want to tell? In the aftermath of that stressful situation, what story do you want to tell? And what I recognize about myself is that oftentimes I find myself regretting some decisions that I've made in the aftermath of stress because I didn't stop to ask this question when I was smack dab in the middle of it. You see, my wife would readily admit to you that Ben Carver is not one who easily or successfully hides his displeasure. And this last week has been a testament to that time and time again. That as we've walked through long days and late nights and spending countless hours with absolutely incredible volunteers who have invested their life in literally blood, sweat, and tears into this place and getting it ready, that there are moments along the way in which something pops up and probably I was mostly doing things wrong. And in that, conflict arises and tension. And how do we fix this? And how do we solve that? And the reality is that in those moments, in those moments of displeasure, in those moments of uncertainty, if I would simply stop and ask the question, in the aftermath of this, what story do I want to tell? My life would be filled with a whole lot less regret. And the reality is that for every single one of us, what we must realize is that the stories we tell with our lives are written one decision at a time, one reaction at a time. And every single one of our reactions rewrite the narrative around what people see in and through us. Your actions may not tell the whole story, but unfortunately, your reactions do. And in our lives, if we allow our reactions to the divide and the division and the disagreements around us to be driven by our emotions, ultimately what we find on the other end is that not only are we not approaching them in a healthy way and we will be full of regret, but we are also not showing the world Jesus. Because showing the world Jesus means bucking the trend of what comes natural to us. Doing the uncomfortable and the difficult and swallowing our pride. See, the reality is the stories we are writing through every decision and every reaction, they are things in the midst of that uncertainty that are defining our value system. Uncertainty only exposes our value system. It only shows what your values are. And when you allow, in the midst of uncertainty and disagreement, for your reaction to be emotionally driven, what happens is this. It confirms to the world around us what they have long thought is true. That you aren't any different than me. That your reactions prove what I've thought all along about the church and about Christ followers. That your biggest concern is about winning. And your biggest fear is losing. And you've become committed to winning at all cost. Even in your life, if it means tearing me down, belittling me, trying to prove me wrong, or attacking me with that jab on social media. The problem with that is this. Is that in our lives, when it comes to disagreement and divide that has become the cultural norm, when winning becomes our greatest value, we are no longer set apart. When winning becomes our greatest value, winning the argument, being right, we are no longer set apart. And for those of us in this room who consider ourselves to be Christ followers, hear me loud and clear on this. We have been called to be set apart. We have been called to be different. We have been called in our lives with our actions and our reactions to be something different for a hurting and broken world that they are desperately looking for. But when we choose to allow our reactions in the middle of political divide or anything else to be driven by emotions, what simply happens in the way in which we are viewed by the world around us is that we are no better than the third, fourth, or fifth political party. Y'all okay? Did I say this wasn't going to be easy? And the world needs more, better, something bigger than just a third, fourth, or fifth political party. And the reality is when we succumb to just allowing winning to be our driving force in every conversation and every disagreement, you can guarantee that we begin to lose. You can guarantee that we begin to lose. But where we begin to make an impact is when we choose to be set apart, to be different. We were called to be people who don't copy the behaviors and customs of this world, but choose to be different, to change the way you think, change the way you act, change the way you react. But when we begin to have this conversation, what I'm willing to bet is that for many of us, the question that rises to the surface is, well, how do I do that? Because it's so ridiculously difficult when everybody else is engaged in picking a side, when everybody else is engaged in division and disagreement. How do I choose? How do I live out something different? And what's so incredible is this, is that the God of the universe who created you and loves you and wants what's best for you, wants you to write an incredible story with your life and the time that you have left on earth, he didn't leave you to figure out the answer to that question on your own. He not only gave us a model in the form of his son, but then he gave us these dudes who teased out what that model actually meant and how regular, normal people like you and I can begin to live like Jesus in our world for the sake of our world. And one of those guys is a guy by the name of Paul. A couple thousand years ago, Paul began writing letters to churches all across the Mesopotamian Rim. And Paul's primary goal was to help them understand what this guy named Jesus was really calling us to and being set apart to make the greatest impact possible for the sake of our kingdom. And time again in these letters, the local churches just like us, he began to tease out that this is what Jesus was really defining for us and how we follow him and how we model him to the world around us. And in one of those such letters, a letter that he writes to the church in Philippi, right smack dab in the middle, Paul begins to tease out this concept of being set apart, how you become light in the middle of darkness. And he says, these are the primary factors that allow you to be different from the world around you. And what I think is so cool, and we're going to dive into this a little bit as we read this passage, what's so absolutely incredible is that Paul draws a correlation to what was taking place 2,000 years ago and what is the same right here, right now in 2023. In Philippians chapter 2, starting in verse 14, this is what Paul writes. Do everything without grumbling or arguing, so that you may become blameless and pure. Children of God without fault in a warped and crooked generation. Then you will shine among them like stars in the sky. You see, Paul doesn't make any sort of differentiation within this particular passage of even when you know you're right, that's when you have freedom to argue and grumble. Even when it's right smack dab in the middle of your value system and what you know God is calling you to, then if that's the case, then that's exception. Then you can argue with people who are outside of that. Then you can grumble about all of those people who aren't living the same lifestyle as you. Paul doesn't make that correlation. He says, never argue or grumble. That is how you become, and then he paints this incredible word picture. That is how you become like stars in the sky. That is where Paul is painting this picture of what it looks like for us to be set apart, this light in the middle of darkness. And then, like I told you, he makes this correlation, right? The reason why we know God's word is still real and relevant right here, right now, today, is because what Paul wrote, what he was experiencing in his world, y'all, ain't that different from what we're experiencing. In fact, let me go so far as to say, we ain't seen nothing compared to what Paul has seen. And he says, in this warped and crooked generation, do you know what Paul was laying out? The world will always be full of messes. It will never be perfectly as it should be. That this world is broken and there's division and disagreement that will always happen around us. But the choice we have as Christ followers is, do we choose to follow Jesus' example and to not grumble or argue, but to shine like stars in the sky? You see, here's the truth of the matter. We all want to live our lives in such a way in which we make an incredible impact. None of us can deny that. We want to live lives of purpose. We want to impact people. And yet oftentimes what we miss is that impactful people never blend in with the crowd. Impactful people are set apart. Impactful people are different. They are like stars in the sky. They are visibly different. And Paul tells us how. Don't succumb to arguing and complaining, no matter what becomes common around you. But what's so cool is that Paul was actually taking his cues from another source. See, Paul's cues when he wrote this passage were coming directly from what Jesus had said just a couple of decades earlier. When the God of the universe put on flesh and came to earth and walked in our shoes in the midst of the Roman Empire, on the precipice of rulers like Nero taking power and burning Christians like candles in his backyard. Jesus took to it and began to model what it looked like to really show him to the world. And this is what Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5, verse 16. In the same way, check this out, you're going to see the correlation. This is perfectly where Paul was taking his passage from. Let your light shine before others. Be like stars in the sky, a light in the darkness, that they may see your rightness and glorify God. That they may see how you win every single argument and glorify God. Paul doesn't say that. That they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. That they may see the way you act and react and glorify God in heaven. You see, what Paul was taking his cues from Jesus and teasing out here is this reality. That you and I weren't called to be right. We were called to be loving. You and I weren't called to be right. We were called to be loving. Y'all okay? And when Paul came onto the scene and he began to tease out what Jesus had lived out and began to better define who Jesus was, he set this example that we are being called to follow. And I don't know about you all, but I want to follow Jesus. That's what I have been called to, singularly. And the easy train of thought is, yeah, but Ben, there is right and there is wrong. I only have one response to that. Jesus knew right and wrong better than I ever will, and this is how he talked and acted. And that's what I want to model my life after. That's what I want us to be about collectively for the sake of our city and for the sake of our world. And Paul goes even further in his other letters, and he writes this letter where he begins to tease out what it really looks like in all lives to be able to recognize whether we are really following Jesus' lead or whether we are being sucked back in to the cultural norm around us. And he gives these two sets of characteristics as this litmus test in all lives for knowing whether or not we are really following Jesus and making the greatest impact possible. Here's what Paul writes in Galatians chapter 5, verse 16. He says, "So I say, let the Holy Spirit guide your lives. Then you won't be doing what your sinful nature craves. When you follow the desires of your sinful nature, the results are very clear." And I'm just going to say something and admit something to y'all here really quick. Oftentimes when I read these lists that Paul often makes within his letters, Paul goes for the hard hitters right off the bat, like the ones in my judgmental mind that I'm like, oh, those are really big ones. And it's like, oh, I'm not doing any of those four, and then I just kind of tune out after the rest of that. Like, oh, all the rest of the ones are minor ones. But Paul makes something abundantly clear that we're going to see at the end of this first list. You see, he starts with the hard hitters: sexual immorality, impurity, lustful pleasures, idolatry, sorcery. I haven't practiced sorcery lately, so I think I'm good. And then I just kind of tune out after that. But those aren't really the hard ones that really make us a model for Jesus in the midst of our present circumstances. And then he says, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, wild parties, and other sins like these. Let me tell you again, as I have before, that anyone living out the first four or the last four will not inherit the kingdom of heaven. But the ones in the middle, those ones, you're okay if you fudge a little bit on that. Anything on that list, for those of us who consider ourselves to be Christ followers, they are non-negotiables. Division, quarreling, hostility, outburst of anger, dissension, envy, jealousy. All of those things that when they come to the forefront of our emotional reactions allow us to see that we're really not exemplifying Jesus to a world around us. But then he goes on and he says, but this is how you know you're actually following Jesus' lead. But the Holy Spirit produces this kind of fruit in our lives: love, joy, peace,
patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. For there is no law against these things. And then I love this. Those who belong to Christ Jesus have nailed the passions and desires of their sinful nature, what comes natural to them, to his cross, and crucified them there. You see that second list? In the midst of our disagreements are the characteristics that we have been called to bring to the forefront of our relationships. And yet, if you're anything like me, it wouldn't be too difficult to admit that that doesn't come naturally. That isn't comfortable. Because if you're anything like me, I've been raised in a household and played sports my entire life. And the fact of the matter is that when it comes to just about everything, and what my father pounded into me is that age-old quote, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. Is that it doesn't matter in my life if it's a board game, it doesn't matter if it's cards, it doesn't matter if it's a disagreement with my spouse or a disagreement here in the office place. I want to win at everything. I want to win, and I am in it to win it in everything in my life. And yet the problem with that mentality that comes natural to me and probably to you is that God's design for us as the church collectively and individually was not what feels natural. Because the church is not here to win. The church was never created to win by the world's standards. Why do I believe this with all of my heart? Because my Savior, the God of the universe who put on flesh and came to this earth, lost by the world's standards. He lost on purpose, for a purpose. And when we become singularly focused on winning every single argument, every single disagreement, choosing a side in everything, the unique mission that we have been given suffers. And along with it, the people that we have been commissioned to love and show the hope of Jesus to suffer with it. Jesus came to lose by human standards. And then here's the kicker. He invited you to lose along with him. And in losing by the world's standards, to redefine what winning really is. To redefine what living a life of impact and purpose really looks like. That we haven't been invited as Christ followers to win by the world's standards, but to lose by the world's standards and ultimately win by God's. To win in a different way. And I feel like it's ridiculously necessary for me to have a 30-second aside here and to make my heart known in this one thing. You see, I want you to know that there is absolutely nothing wrong with. In fact, there is something good and powerful about you being active politically. Like, you should vote every time you are given the chance. But this is where the dividing line comes in. This is the line of separation. No matter how we stand politically, no matter how we stand in every division and disagreement of our lives, our tone, posture, and approach should always reflect Jesus. Our posture, tone, and approach should always reflect Jesus. And don't hit me with, yeah, Ben, yeah. But have you ever read the passage where Jesus flipped the temple tables because he was angry? What about that one? Come on, y'all. As Christ followers, we're better than that. Jesus flipped the temple tables on church people who are making a relationship with God a financial transaction. Let's not sell that one short. He set a different standard, a different approach for every single one of us. And I think the pull that pulls all of us towards the dissension and the disagreement that has become a cultural norm around us is ultimately this belief as Christ followers that lies deep within us. And I don't know in myself where that belief has come from, and yet what I know is that it's there. This tendency to see the local church, the church, as fragile. That if the church doesn't win this argument, then the church will fall apart. That ultimately it will crumble. And yet the truth of the matter is we are invited to something far bigger and better than that. Far bigger and better than an organization that can go bankrupt or a political party that can go extinct. You see, the gospel changed the world, and it has stood the test of time. It is not fragile. And because of that, the church is not fragile. I will build my church, and not even the gates of hell will stop it. You see, if we want to be able to live like Jesus, we have to stop seeing the church as fragile. We react out of fear because we believe our religious liberties are being infringed upon, when many parts of the world would look on and be like, no, not really. When first century followers like Peter and Paul would be like, you ain't seen nothing yet. Let me introduce you to Nero. Who God is and what he has commissioned us to is not fragile. And it does not have to influence our posture, our tone, and our approach in reflecting Jesus to our world. It has been modeled for us by this guy we are following. And hear me on this. This is so ridiculously important. Every single one of us get to choose if we follow Jesus. In his great love for us, he gave us that choice. But we don't get to choose how we follow Jesus. That has already been prescribed to us. It has already been modeled for us through Jesus. That if you want to follow me, act like me. If you want to follow me, react like me. In the middle of disagreement, in the middle of dissension, in the middle of division. You see, one of my favorite passages that Paul writes is this passage in which he teases out what it looks like to live out Jesus in a practical way in the midst of whatever divide we find ourselves in our culture. In 1 Corinthians chapter 9, Paul writes this, that this is what it looks like for normal guys and gals like you and me to live out Jesus in the midst of our world. He says, though I am free and belong to no one, I have made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. You see, all of a sudden, Paul redefines winning. Paul redefines what impact really looks like in our world for the sake of our world. He says, I put myself beneath others in order to actually win. I lose by the world's standard at falling down the rung as it is in the ranking system, that I may influence, that I may impact, that I may show other people Jesus in the clearest way possible. To the Jews, I became like a Jew to win the Jews. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law, I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak, I became weak to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means, I might save some. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in its blessings. Wait, Ben. So what you're saying Jesus modeled and Paul teased out is essentially this. That submitting to and serving others is actually the best way to influence others? No. That's what this guy that we follow modeled. That's the example that he set. In washing feet. In sitting at the table and having a meal with the dude who in a couple of hours was going to walk away and have him arrested to be crucified on a cross. Submitting to and serving others is actually the way of influencing people in the greatest means possible. That is how we are set apart. That is how we model love. And hear me on this, that doesn't mean compromising values. It means compromising approach, because approach matters. In every relationship and every conversation we've ever had, approach matters. Our approach always determines the success of the relationship. It always determines the success of the message that we are trying to convey. Approach always matters. And in order for us to follow Jesus the way we are called to follow Jesus, we must consistently be willing to reevaluate our approach, our tone, our posture when it comes to division and disagreement in our lives and in our world. And I get the internal tug. The internal tug is that everything you're talking about, Ben, feels an awful lot like compromising my values and my beliefs. It feels like just playing it safe in the middle. Can I just say this? There is nothing safe about following Jesus. There is nothing easy about following Jesus. Following Jesus and doing what Jesus did is not the middle of the road at all. It is shining like a star. It is being set apart. The easy road is doing what everybody else is doing and picking sides. The difficult road is following Jesus. And instead of tying our faith to a political side, we choose to stand with Jesus in the lonely, messy middle for the sake of our world. We aren't in it to win it as the world defines. We are in it to win it like Jesus did. And so my question is this. When this season is nothing but a story you tell, what story do you want to tell? What impact do you want to have made? Because if you want to make the greatest impact possible and follow Jesus in the way we have been called to follow Jesus, it requires us to adjust our approach, our tone, our posture in the relationships of our lives, and most specifically in the relationships of our lives in which we see the greatest disagreements and division and divide. That is what Jesus has called us to, and that, y'all, is how we become individuals and how we become a collective body that ultimately changes the world in unforeseen ways. That is how we become people who are mature enough to live lives in which we can be set apart and not in it to win it. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you. We thank you for being a God who loves us enough to not only want what's best for us and for us to write a great story with our lives and with the impact that we made, but when it comes to the confusing and the difficult parts of navigating tension and division and divide in our lives, disagreement in our relationships, you are a God who desires us to be successful in those things and to model your son so well that you don't leave us to figure out those questions and that uncertainty on our own. You gave us a model in the form of your son. You gave us your word to help tease that out for us to better understand what it looks like to win, not by the world's standards, but to redefine winning, to make the greatest impact possible. And so God, as difficult as that may be in our present circumstances and our present political and cultural climate, God, may we become people who are singularly focused. I want to follow your son. I want to be like your son. In submitting to and serving others as the best way of influencing others. Swallowing my pride and knowing I haven't been called to be right. I've been called to be loving. God, even when it gets hard, give us the courage to do just that. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.